Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
It's a drunken soiree in the within.
Chris and Stu present Our Core Listing, the podcast.
Hello and welcome to the new look, Hardcore Listing. It's a new look if you're watching it. If you're listening, it's exactly the same. But we would suggest that you head over to our Patreon and have a look at what we're doing, because we've got a swish new TV studio. Well, swish. We've got a big digital screen behind us, so we'll be showing the pictures of what we're talking about as we work our way through it. And basically, we're just giving a load more back to the Patreons, because the existing Patreons have supported us for a few years now, and we've been putting the Zoom videos up on there. But we thought, right, how can we ramp this up? So we've built this amazing studio, and you get to watch us in full Technicolor. That does, unfortunately, mean you have to look at our faces. Anyway,
we're turning it up to 11.
Yeah, we've gone full 11. Now then, let me tell you about this Patreon. So not only do you get to watch us in our studio doing these amazing videos, you get them before we release anything anywhere else. So you get it up front, and that also means you don't get the adverts. So you get it all ad free. Let me tell you what else you get. You get the audio episodes up front, ad free. You get a bonus episode each week that only comes out on Patreon. Chris and I have a hardcore natter where we just chew the fat, and that goes straight to the Patreons and nowhere else. Yeah. We also do a live show, right?
We do a live show once a month. That is the patrons' opportunity to come and, you know, rub shoulders with the big wigs, me and you. So they can come and hang out virtually, obviously not face-to-face. Wouldn't want that. But basically, once a month, we'll pick a top five. Usually one of the patrons has picked it. We'll do a rundown. And, you know, get everyone who's on that live show can contribute. We'll ask them for their input. It normally involves them insulting the pair of us quite a lot. And it's a lot of fun. And then once we finish recording that, we normally have a catch-up, because there's a bit of a community over there.
Lovely community.
A cult, I think some people call it. But, you know, you need to find out more about that cult. Just pop on Patreon. It doesn't involve blood sacrifice, usually. No. And then actually, because of this wonderful studio, and a massive thanks to Stu for putting all this together, and we'll shout out our sponsors as well. You know, we're thinking maybe we'll do some live shows here. So we'll have like a live studio audience.
Which would be great. You just get to come and see how the magic happens. You get a peek behind the curtain to the professionalism and the effort and the sacrifice that Chris and I put into this. You know, we'll talk to you about the years of prep that we put into every single episode. Ultimately, you'll just get to come here and have a few beers and just watch us talk shit.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you'll get to peek behind what's behind the cameras now, the massive studio crew that we've also got,
makeup artists,
runners. Performance runners, fluffers, you name it.
Sex workers.
Why are we fluffing our own show? Why are we fluffing the studio crew is what I don't understand.
Good,
don't. I'm not sure if that's how it's supposed to work.
So, why not come over and have a look? You can sign up for just 1 month, and then what you can do in that month, if you, you know, we know that, that money's tight. It doesn't cost a lot, but if you head
30
over...
30 grand a year.
30 grand a year. I mean, it's chump change, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Of course
yeah.
it isn't. It's peanuts. But you can head over to Patreon, patreon.com/hardcore listing. The links are in the show notes, wherever you listen to this. The links are in all our social media bios. So just go and click it. And when you head over there, you'll see a funny little video of me and Chris talking about Patreon. It's a little bit dated now, actually, that video. We should do another one. Now
we look so much younger.
Yeah.
Less jaded.
I don't think I've got grey hair in my beard on that one. And so not only do you get all of that content, essentially, you're supporting us because we don't make money out of this. So we've been doing this for over 5 years now. And so it's your opportunity to also support us in our endeavours and help kind of pay for what you're watching or listening to.
Yeah.
So any support there will be much appreciated.
Yeah.
I did mention, sign up for 1 month and then even if you can't afford it, you know, for the second month, in that month, you will have access to hundreds and hundreds of shows, hundreds of videos, hundreds of radio shows, all sorts of stuff. So go and rinse that back catalogue, and you can fuck off after a month if you want, but I don't think you will, because once you've been to the live hangout, once you see what we're doing in this studio now, I think you're going to go, let's support this, let's become part of the gang. Patreon. Patreon.com/hardcore listing. You mentioned our sponsors.
Yes, exactly. So you can see, could you get a bigger TV screen?
But that was the biggest TV I could find.
No, I was not surprised. And we've got in the smallest part of the TVCs our sponsors. but we have got Southern Martial Arts and the Say What podcast. Huge thanks to those guys. Obviously, again, that's what gives us the opportunity to do this sort of stuff, right? And have built a studio here. So we've got Southern Martial Arts, Renshi, Simon James. Do you want to learn martial arts? Me and Shu have done it for years, not so much these days. We still do a bit. I think as soon as I'd mastered it, I didn't need to do any more.
Completed it.
I'd completed it, mate, 100% on my Xbox record. But you can go and learn martial arts, a variety of different martial arts through Southern Martial Arts. Links will be in everything we put out. But you can not only learn martial arts, you can go and become a martial arts instructor. Renshi, Simon James will fast track you. So if that's a new career, if you want a new career that's around health and fitness and being able to defend yourself and your loved ones, then go and check out Southern Martial Arts. They're just a bomb. And he's expanding all the time. So the classes are expanding. He's got a massive network throughout the south of England. So if you're south of England base, it might be for you. And then we have...
Before we do that, Southern Martial Arts, they're tagged in all of our social media posts. They'll be in the show notes as well. So give them a click. If you're on the socials, then give them a follow as well and just show your support that way as well. And become a badass.
Become a badass.
I mean, such positivity coming from Southern Martial Arts. So if we sort of want to sort of bring things back down to a very negative and shit-based level, it's our opportunity now to talk about the Say What podcast.
Beyond, below, bottom of the barrel, isn't it? You go through the barrel and you start entering just sort of like the Earth's crust.
Yeah, it's the most politically incorrect podcast.
Oh, yes.
It's fronted by two people that have no boundaries, knowledge, prep, thought process.
A lot of hate in their hearts.
Yeah, dark souls. We we went on the Say What podcast last week. I would say one of the most pointless hours of my life ever spent. They come and done our podcast first, which you can listen to now that's out.
Yep.
But then that level of Big Papa Jay saying, let's just freestyle it, which never works, ever works. He then, once he finished recording that show, we went on his podcast. It was the most unstructured shower of shit I think I've ever been involved with.
And I enjoyed every minute of it.
I was stone cold sober, drunk a bottle of whiskey, loads of fucking lager, and other bits and pieces. And it's very, very apparent when you listen.
The time of my life, man. They taught me to live, laugh, love.
Tony, you've got that behind your sofa in your new girlfriend.
I've got a new tattoo of that, man. Don't want it to catch on too much.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I've got it in. The good thing is, though, even if it catches on too much, no one will completely know it's live, laugh, love because I've done it in Japanese.
Brilliant.
Brilliant. So hopefully that doesn't catch on either.
I went swimming at, what was the old pool in Basildon?
Gloucester Park.
I went to Gloucester Park swimming
about
once.
That the other day,
And there was a bloke queuing up to go on a slide or whatever it was that was there. Or a board. I don't know what it was. It was a long time ago. But as I was standing behind him in the queue, It looked like one of his mates had got drunk and tattooed in the biggest letters ever down his back, "Get rich or die trying." And I remember thinking,
fucking brilliant.
Fuck me. It's a good thing that's what on your back and you don't have to look at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was shocking.
Absolute G. What would be the most, like, if you had to go for the most lowest common denominator tattoo, I think if you could get working like a piece of tribal tattoo with some form of calligraphy, Cantonese, with maybe, and saying something like live, laugh, love, made in Basildon is a good one, or it is what it is.
Yeah, nonce.
Grass. I think that would be great.
Absolutely. Right, well, look, welcome to the show anyway.
Yes,
let's get on with it.
All right, let's do it.
Today, we are doing top five fight scenes in films. Christopher William Glasson's suggestion. I'm loving it. You can start today, so I'm going to press the button there.
Look at this. Look at what you've got here.
Chris's like, number five.
Oh, amazing. So, holy shit, like, this just feels so professional.
I know.
You've done a PowerPoint for today. So, use lot. Do you know what this is?
No idea.
No idea. Do you know who any of these actors are?
Is that Jackie Chan on the end?
This Jackie Chan here.
Yeah.
Sammo Hung is in the middle, and that I believe is Yuen Biu.
Right.
And they back in the '80s were just like the holy triumvirate of great martial artists in China. Mm-hmm. And this film is called Meals on Wheels. It's weird because I wasn't going to have it in my top five. I was going to have it as an honourable mention. Because I thought no one will know about it, really, these days. And so everyone will be bored. And then I thought, you know what? Who cares? It's one of my favourites. And when I actually looked, I thought, have I missed any big, you know, fights from films and stuff like that? This was in, I think it was Time Out's top 30. And I was like, see, so I'm not going fucking crazy. So the film is called Wheels on Meals, 1984.
Wheels on Meals?
Wheels on Meals.
See what they've done now.
Clever, right?
Yeah.
It's amazing. And it's like sort of like in the height of Jackie Chan, sort of like really developing his sort of like comedic kung fu movie style with Sammo Hung in the middle and Yuen Biu. They're incredible actors. They went to, I think it was something like the Peking Opera School of Martial Arts to train, where they'd have to do things like hold a handstand for literally like an hour.
Yeah, essential fight skills.
Essential fight skills. What things that me and you do. We were doing it this, what did we get to? 2 hours, and then we like had to get on.
I learned how to do it over lockdown.
You learned it on lockdown. Mm. Yeah, we did 2 hours this morning in handstands, but the cast and crew, they were getting sick of just watching.
I had to get in a makeup.
Yeah, exactly. You needed a few hours there. So basically, I mean, I ain't going to give you the massive breakdown of what Wheels on Meals is about because it's been fucking years since I watched it. But I did immediately, when we said fight scenes and films, know that I wanted to do this fight scene. It's the final fight between Jackie Chan and a kickboxing world champion called Benny the Jet Akides. I don't know if you've ever heard of that guy. Might be a little bit earlier than your interest in sort of martial arts because he was like undefeated, but fucking decades and decades ago. Basically in the 80s.
When I was doing karate.
When you was doing karate, mate, you hadn't moved on to kickboxing by that point. But this fight scene between Jackie Chan and Benny the Jet, it's incredible. It's directed but choreographed by Sammo Hung in the middle, who's an incredible martial artist himself. And it goes on for 5 minutes. And back then, like a whole long 5 minutes where there's not much but just them kicking the shit out of each other was really impressive. And it's just... It's incredible. It won awards for how well choreographed it was. And so actually it still stands the test of the time now. And kind of like how it all goes to start with is Jackie Chan's all like, he's really trying his hardest to beat Benny the Jet. And then he realizes that he needs to relax and sort of like treat it like a training session. And then like the music kicks in and it's like really cool, like this Hong Kong. And that's it. And then he actually gets better and eventually he beats Benny the Jet Akides. And it's fucking amazing, man. I would really recommend it. The film itself is really funny. I'm sure, if memory serves me correctly, Jackie Chan does a load of skateboarding in it as well at one point. But I might be mixing that with Freddy Got Fingered with Tom Green. So two films I haven't seen in a long time.
I don't think I've ever seen a Jackie Chan film.
Oh, man.
See, again, in the 80s, I was of an age when... You know, I mean, the martial arts does feature in one of my picks today. Yeah. but it was all VHSs from a video shop, and I would have watched Enter the Dragon a million times, and Fist of Fury and stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't think I ever watched a jacket. There was another actor called Bruce Lye, L-I. And I remember him being in loads of masks. So I used to go in a video shop and pick up all the sleeves and think, I'd love to watch that.
Yeah,
But I think when I was maybe 10 or 11, when I could go to the video shop and get like a VHS ad, it was at the time when everything went ninja. So it was like American Ninja and all of that. And at that point, it was like, right, Bruce Lee's cool, but ninjas are cooler. Like, the thought of seeing ninjas, like, I was like, all of a sudden there was ninjutsu classes opening.
Oh,
and I just remember thinking, in my little white karate gi, just thinking, fucking hell. Because I'd already seen, like, people in like cool like martial arts films wearing like sort of silk trousers and a sash and thinking that looks so cool.
Yeah,
I remember
going
to a karate competition and there was a there was one team that all had black gis, and I remember thinking, I bet they're deadly.
And then when
ninjas come along.
I mean, we had, because we were at the same karate thing, weren't we? We had black gis there as well, mate.
Oh, I never got to the point where I had that. I just had one.
We
white
had our black geese with they put my name down the right arm as well. Yeah, and Top Gun down that side. I'm not lying. I'll kid you not. I had a black one and a red one.
Yeah, you had live, love, laugh as well, didn't you?
On in Cantonese with a sick tribal motive.
Sweet,
man.
Love.
But
I remember just the ninja thing just looks so exciting.
Oh, it looks
so good. Obviously we had the martial arts shop in Basel, and so I'd go
shout out and buy plastic nunchuckers,
practice nunchuckers and shuriken stars and just throwing them at me fence in the garden.
Oh, mate, and there was that picture of, there was someone, I don't know if it was Bruce Lee, but there was on the wall was a guy just kicking a concrete column and just shattering it with a sight of Yokogeri.
His shin, not the wall.
Oh, man, Cam's martial arts, shout out to Cam. But like the ninja outfits, I remember American Ninja. Those movies were so good because just the cheap editing that they'd throw like a smoke bomb down.
That's all I wanted from that shop.
And then they'd just like, they'd obviously cut, the guy would walk away and then they'd play and he'd just fucking disappear.
That was all I wanted to get from that shop was smoke bombs.
Smoke bombs.
I wanted to like kind of like creep along fences.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you've done that when you got to uni, but like I wanted to sort of creep along fences and then sort of just disappear behind a smoke bomb and like...
Yeah.
But I could never afford.
Did you ever
we
see
did have
anyone?
A ninja outfit.
I was literally going to ask this.
Our bass player bought a ninja outfit, in Serious Problem.
Mm-hmm.
And we advertised a gig
saying
it was one of our first times we decided we'd split up. And it was like, last ever gig, special guest on bass, John Deacon from Queen. And we had a few people turning up expecting to see John Deacon from Queen, and it was actually Neil Pye, our bass player, but in a full ninja outfit. So no one could actually contest it.
It was like,
it might be.
Yeah.
A ninja's not going to reveal himself, is he?
Oh, no.
So, I never realised, but yes, John Deacon from Queen was a ninja.
The first guy I ever saw in a ninja outfit, I was about like 11. No, I was about 9, and it was just so disappointing.
Oh, really?
It was a lad from my primary school. I didn't really like him. He lived at the local pub. I think his dad was the local landlord, and at some point he brought in his ninja outfit. But he's just really ill-fitting. So the mystery of ninjas was a little bit sort of like, it was too small for him. He had a little bit of a paunched tummy.
Oh. All right, Martin. And,
yeah. You just see his milky white belly hanging through.
Would have been me in a ninja outfit.
It was like, oh, I don't know about this.
That's when you want the smoke bomb, and that's when you want to disappear.
Yeah, absolutely. You'd need about 3 or 4. Jackie Chan. So I've obviously watched a lot of the Bruce Lee ones. Obviously, all the major ones are really good. But I probably have watched way more Jackie Chan films than police things like Police Story. Drunken Master is just insanely good. Yeah, man, he's incredible. And all these were on a little video called Best of Martial Arts, which as a 9-year-old, my dad bought me. And I remember he tried to hide this video before he gave it at the top of the kitchen cabinets. But like a true ninja... Like a true ninja, I saw him stick it up there and he thought he'd been clever. And it was in a brown paper bag. He'd been clever hiding it up there. No. As soon as the coast was clear, I was up on the kitchen counter next to the hob, so quite dangerous.
Mm.
And I was there and I was like, I fucking can't wait for Dad to give me this.
Love this.
And that was it. That was the start of like my fascination with karate. And that's why I'm, you know, black belt 8th Dan. Yeah, yeah. Don't look into that.
Right.
What's your number 5, mate? Woo, baby.
So, what you can't see if you're listening is a picture of a scout walker.
Mm-hmm. Did you say scat walker?
Scout walker.
Okay,
right. Which is like the kind of smaller AT-AT, which had two legs.
Yeah.
It's from Return of the Jedi. It's the Endor fight scene where at the moment you can see Han with his hands above his head surrounded by multiple stormtroopers. And as much as I knew I was going to pick a fight scene from the Star Wars franchise. And
so many to choose
there's from. There's so many to choose from. Mm-hmm. Now, I discounted the speeder bike scene.
Oh, it's so good.
Because that's one of the greatest moments in film.
It's great. Yeah, yeah,
the sound of them speeder bikes was just unreal. But the scene when basically the rebels align themselves with the Ewoks and then they use sort of primal means to fight back. So you've got the scout walkers and you've got the AT-ATs and you know, all the Imperial forces with their state-of-the-art stuff, whereas the Ewoks essentially are cuddly teddy bears.
Cuddly teddy bears with twigs and kind of relatively small rocks.
Rocks and logs and how they trip up the AT-ATs, smash into the AT-ATs with logs swinging from the trees. It's just fucking brilliant.
Oh, it's great.
It's also got one of the saddest scenes ever.
As soon as you showed me this, the image of that
Ewok dying and the little Ewok crying.
And checking on him. The fact that he's going to try and pick him up. Well, come on, mate, let's get going. And then, like, it's this lifeless Ewok body. That's too much, man. Lucas is a sicko. Because he's setting kids up.
Do you know what,
He's setting kids up for failure.
I've had a rough fucking week this week. I could honestly feel myself about to cry. If I watched that scene now, I'd be a wreck.
And it doesn't need words. Like, good, you know, cinematography in that.
Yeah.
To convey that emotion, you don't need words to be like someone's checking on their buddy who's now fucking not moving. It's like, it's horrible.
Yeah, it's essentially a small teddy bear has just died. Has been blown
up. If he made them like all look like Dobby from Harry Potter,
fine.
No one would have given a shit.
Move
He'd be
on.
Like, oh, he's a wretch. Get rid of him.
Absolutely.
Those cute little teddy bears. The reality of, and I do believe they're AT-STs. So if anyone out there screaming at Stu, probably Riker, going, you got that wrong, you prick. Yeah. I believe it's an AT-ST, although I could be wrong. Anyway, like the reality of the, you know, the stormtroopers versus teddy bears, the stormtroopers would have probably in reality crushed them. But as we well know, stormtroopers
good overcomes
can't.
Evil.
Yeah, it does. And stormtroopers, my missus watched the first one with me, and even she observed in the first one. Like the very first thing is like, and there's a meme of this, which you can see, which is Obi-Wan. You know, in the first one where there's the big Jawa sandcrawler that's been taken out, and Obi-Wan's like, only the precision hits of a stormtrooper could have done this. And then the rest of the movie is stormtroopers missing every single shot.
Good.
And Molly, good, yeah. Molly was watching it going, these stormtroopers are a shit shot. And I'm like, man, even to the untrained eye, she like cottoned on that they don't have a hope in hell. I guess that's why the Ewoks prevailed, is because the stormtroopers actually can't hit anything for fucking for shit.
Because they're not robots. They're and what's weird is it was only in Force Awakens when, is it John Boyega? Boyega. Mm-hmm. When he takes his helmet off, he's just like, oh, I don't want to see that.
Yeah, like, it's disturbed the...
He's all right, he's a beautiful man.
Hold on. Shoe's not being racist, right away. He wasn't assuming they were all white. Oh, man!
But it was like when Vader, you know, takes his helmet off.
I
want the mystery. But Endor scene, Return of the Jedi.
It is incredible. It's got everything. Because they've all been captured. You think, the game's up, look, Chewie in hand, the game's up there, and then you're like, hold on a minute.
Of course it's
hold
not.
Hold on, it's not going to be. They're going to turn it round, aren't they? Leia and C-3PO. Incredible stuff.
Right, you're number 4.
Oh, I can't even remember what I've picked. Oh, it's the bride. It's Uma Thurman. Uma Thurman as the bride in Kill Bill Volume 1. This is so cool. This actually, her outfit here, this yellow jumpsuit, is what...
It's a nod to Bruce Lee,
yeah,
right?
It is a nod to Bruce Lee. I don't think it was his... Is it Fist of Fury? I can't... It's been a while. Guesswork is kicking
it's
in.
It's definitely not End of the Dragon.
It's not End of the Dragon, no, it's not. It's Fist of Fury. I'm pretty certain. No, I'm not. I'm not certain at all. It's when he fights... Do you know who he fights in that outfit?
Chuck Norris?
Nope. Any others?
Rocky Balboa.
It's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Famous basketball player.
Right.
Yeah, superstar. And it's a great fight. It's a really, really cool fight scene. Yes, they did it for Kill Bill Volume 1, Uma Thurman. Bit of trivia. How much for Kill Bill did they spend on swords and knives for this movie? $60,000.
What, money well spent.
Money well spent.
What a film.
Oh, so
both
good.
Of them. Incredible.
It really is. It really is cool. It was a bit of a change of pace, I think. I mean, he kind of done like all these, you know, like, I call them serious films, you know, your Reservoir Dogs, your Pulp Fiction. And this is when he started to really get into, like, I'm a massive fan of these sort of films. So, like, Shogun Assassin and stuff like that. So not a massive departure from the sort of the Jackie Chan. It's still that same era of incredible, like, Eastern martial arts movies. Shogun Assassin, which is really cool. And yeah, this fight scene's insane. I mean, I love the setup of Kill Bill, the idea that the bride's trying to seek revenge on, what is it, five assassins? Is it five of them? Who have basically crossed her and killed her, including her husband, Bill, obviously. And this is like the climax of the first film. It's just a bomb.
She's so fucking cool in this film.
Yeah.
I mean, she's fucking great anyway, but in this film, like, to pull off the level of fight that she does, her sword skills and stuff, she just makes it look like she's been doing it a lifetime. And it's fucking the bollocks, mate. And again, it's, you know, I love how Tarantino does his little nods to whatever sort of genre of film that, you know, that he's grown up being influenced by, you know, whether it be, I guess, the Western stuff with Hateful Eight and Django.
Yeah.
And all the war films with Inglourious Bastards and stuff. It's just fucking cool as fuck.
One
more film's to come, right? I believe there's only one more left that he's going to make, so I can't wait to see what that is. But solid shot, Glasson.
What else was I going to say about this? This is the one where it goes black and white halfway through because he couldn't get approval from, like, the American film board. But I didn't give a shit. Like, I actually had to, when I was looking at a bit of trivia for this, I actually had to be reminded that it goes black and white, which is strange. Because you'd imagine, like, a lot of the audience were like, oh, I want to see all the blood. And I think you can, I haven't seen the director's cut where it's just full colour. I haven't seen that. I didn't really care.
No.
And it's that whole thing of jeopardy. When she starts fighting the girl who's swinging a ball of mace around, it's so good, and you're worried that she's actually going to lose that fight. That girl's in a film called Battle Royale, which was really good. It had just come out just before it. And then she goes and fights Lucy Liu, Ori Nishi.
The animation in it's amazing as well.
Oh, God, yeah. It's really cool. That's how Ori Nishi becomes the leader of the Yakuza, right? It's really good. And, like, just going back to the choreography, like, not... Choreography can make someone who's not a traditionally trained martial artist like Uma Thurman, it can make them look really good.
Mm.
But it's not, you're not, it isn't like, if you watch, like, I've seen plenty of bad choreography with actors, actresses who don't have a martial arts background, try and do it and it looks shit. And Uma Thurman, she makes it, she pulls it off, doesn't she?
Massively.
Yeah, I love it, man. Watching one person fight 88 people, it's a lot like my like early 20s. Do you know what I mean? A lot of my friends would say, you know, me at the moon on the square.
Yeah.
You know, they'd see that sort of shit. So it's nice to see someone else do it.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think Uma Thurman had to have full reconstructive surgery.
As 88 fucks filled me in.
Right, my number four. So, have you seen this?
Have I seen this?
Right. So my number four is the Brit gangster flick Love, Honor, and Obey, and it's made by oh god, what's his name?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast. And up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
He's
I'm just going to say Sadie Frost because it's the first name.
No. It's made by Ray Burdiss.
Ray Burdiss.
Ray Burdiss' brother's in it. And Ray Burdiss plays Ray in it. He plays Kathy Burke's husband who gets killed.
Oh, yeah.
He gets shot at a wedding. This film, for me, sums up that point in the 90s where, to reel off some of the cast, Sadie Frost, Ray Winston, Johnny Lee Miller, Jude Law, Sean Pertwee, Kathy Burke, Denise Van Atten, Reese Iphens. It was the absolute cool kids in this film.
It was really good, man.
This was the second film. I think the first film that Burdiss made with all of them in was called Final Cut.
Final Cut, yeah.
And they're at Winston's funeral. And he reads the will out, and then it's the fallout of that.
Yeah.
And Ray Burdiss had also, previous to this, with a lot of this cast, had made Operation Good Guys, the TV cop shit series.
Did that
series.
Come before Love on a Rebate?
I think it did,
Was it after?
And,
same cast, though, pretty much.
Yeah. And it's just absolutely fantastic. Anyway, the film is based on the rivalry between Ray Winston's gang and Ray Winston's son, who's played by... Jude Law. Jude Law's one of the most handsome men on the planet at this point. And
that first scene where he's just walking down the street
in the fucking Fila tracksuit.
In a tracksuit with a little fucking thin gold chain. Yeah. You're just like, oh,
so
looks
cool.
Like done.
And basically he's grown up with Johnny Lee Miller, who's just a postman, but gets pulled into the wants to be a gangster, and then he just gets carried away.
Yeah.
And he, like, Johnny Lee Miller has this rivalry with Sean Pertwee's kind of henchman, that's Reese Iphens, and how they terrorize each other is fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
But a big part of the film culminates in a scrapyard with a shootout, and it's so fucking good, this fight scene. Because there's one line in it where basically they're all shooting at each other with machine guns and stuff. It's mental.
Yeah.
And then it kind of all falls quiet and they're all kind of like sort of crouched down with their backs against cars, like hiding. And they're all shitting themselves.
Yeah, because they're not like a couple of the heavy guys are military training.
Yeah.
They're ex-forces. But most of them are just gangsters and... gangsters with shotguns and machine guns, and like they don't really know what they're doing.
And this ain't Goodfellas. So much comedy in this.
Yeah, there is.
There's so many lines that are so quotable.
Yeah.
Like, you're fat and I'll throw you in the river. And there's so many hilarious scenes in it. And the music in it, like the trailer for it is them all, because what they all love, both gangs, is karaoke.
Yeah, karaoke, yeah.
And hearing like Ray Winston and all of them singing Avenues and Alleyways by Tony Christie is fucking brilliant. The theme tune to Fireball XL5, it's fucking so cool. But they're in this fight scene and it all stops and it falls silent. And then they're all shitting themselves and then they have this nervous laugh where they all start laughing. And Ray Winston just can barely get his words out, but just shouts, fixed bayonets. And you just see Sean Pertree on the other side of the yard go, fixed bayonets. Fixed bayonets, what are they doing? And they shit themselves and just jump in their van and fuck off. And it's just such a ridiculous scene in just a hilarious film. If you've never watched Love on a Bay, just watch it. It's so good. It just, like, fucking hell, Sadie Frost is one of the most beautiful things you could watch in a film at that point. Ray Winston's just does what Ray Winston does best, just plays a fucking great gangster, but with comedy bones as well. Reese Iphens, and he's just hapless. It gets dark. There's a massive sort of, not twist at the end, but it really gets fucking dark. And yeah, it's a fucking great film. So yeah, that fight scene is my number four.
It's got everything, mate.
Your number three, Mr. Glasson, is?
Let's have a little look what comes up. Oh, yes.
What's this?
Do you know what this is?
No.
This is me, back at uni.
Right.
That's me. That's my uni guys. And this is a trained police officer and another sort of gangster.
Yeah.
Just your average sort of like Friday night for me, mate. Really taking down some people.
I've seen this advertised. This is called I've Seen People Die Man, isn't it?
Yeah, you'd have to listen to our podcast for a long time to understand that reference. But I've had hard life, Stu.
Streets of Birmingham are tough places, mate.
Streets of Brum, mate. That's where I cut my teeth. That's where I applied my trade.
Yeah.
I spread a few people like margarine over those fucking streets, I tell you. And
didn't you just take a load of drugs and fuck everything up?
I did. Yeah, that was it. My life up. I fucked everything up. My life.
Yeah. In hindsight, I made a few bad decisions back then.
Yeah, one of the best lines in the film ever. Shout out to Steve Buscemi. Big Daddy.
Weddings. Big Daddy, not Wedding Singer. What a
lie. Well.
Here I made a few bad decisions.
So me and our fellow buddy Scroobius Pip went to watch this in the cinema, and the end of this fight scene had it right. So obviously, we knew this film was coming out. It is called The Raid. It was 2011, right? So going back a few years now.
Oh, you boys love this, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. And so it kind of is a bit responsible a little bit for why Dread 3D bombed a bit, because they have kind of similar premises. Like they're all based, most of the film is all based in one sort of like block of flats, and they have to try and get out of them. But it's just coincidence that happened, and both of them are incredible films.
Has it been remade?
What?
The Raid?
No, they did The Raid 2, and right. I don't know whether or not they were going to make another Hollywood version of it. I don't think they have, and I don't really give a shit.
Is this because Japanese?
This is, I think it's South Korea.
Right.
It's just the shit. It's directed by a guy called Gareth Evans, who's an English chap.
He's got to be Welsh.
Oh, he's Welsh. He's done loads of other big things. I think he also went on to do Godzilla. Man, that is guesswork. That's incredible.
People like it.
I think he did Rogue One as well, which I fucking love, Rogue One. Again, this I could be mixing up two directors here. Yeah. People are going to be screaming at me for getting that.
He made Forrest Gump
wrong
as well, didn't he?
He made Forrest Gump, Goonies, Schindler's Lisp.
Yep.
All the classics.
Yeah.
And founded Disney.
Yeah,
as well.
Absolutely. So on our first show, we've hit a new low. Chris is now mocking genocide.
I said Schindler's Lisp. Didn't say anything about the you know what the background to that lisp was. It was genocide. So The Raid, it's the shit. And this is the final fight. Anyway, this cinema that me and Pip went to, I think Mark might have come with us too. You guys don't give a shit about that. No one cares about Mark. We went to watch it. It's full of blokes. And when this fight scene ends, many of us were clapping and some were standing up clapping. It's just like, it's one of the best fight scenes that you'll ever see. It kind of like revived a lot of brutalist martial arts. And then TV shows like Daredevil obviously saw this and was like, holy shit, that's how to do it. I mean, a lot of the fight scenes throughout The Raid are just, you see some really grotty stuff with how people get dispatched, and it looks just brilliant. And it's fast paced. They did it on a massive shoestring budget. I think Gareth Evans said they wanted, for this 5-minute long fight scene, they wanted like 12 days to film it, because that's how long these things take. But they only had something like 8 days. So the three actors involved here all just got, you know, badly bruised, bust up to do it. But Stu, I really recommend watching The Raid. It's an incredible action film. It holds up to this day. The Raid 2 was just even more absolutely bananas. But yeah, I would wholeheartedly say you've got to watch this. But it's Indonesian, sorry. It's Indonesian.
Okay.
But yeah, it's the shit. And yeah,
got Numero
not much else to say.
Trois.
Oh, I don't know what this is.
No idea?
Bloodsport?
Nearly. The clues in that sort of crane kick he's throwing there.
Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
He's just joshing. Yeah. We're talking about the Karate Kid, of course.
Yes.
The iconic fight scene at the All Valley Karate Championships. Ralph Macchio, a.k.a. Danny LaRusso, versus Johnny. This, for me, hit at the right time. I think, when did this come out? Maybe 85 or 6.
Right.
And me, like many others, watched The Karate Kid and then joined a karate school.
Same.
And I'm sure karate schools just went through the roof after this film come out. They made a remake, didn't they, with Willie Smith's kid. I'm not interested
Willow?
In that.
Is it Willow? Jackie Chan's Mr. Miyagi in it.
Oh, right. Oh,
it's
okay.
Actually not awful.
Yeah.
It's all right.
I imagine the fight scenes are probably a lot better because the the fight scenes in this are quite shit, but brilliant. So that's why it's made my number three. Because Johnny clearly has done martial arts and knows and knows great. What he's doing, right? Yeah. He's really good. All of the other people that sort of end up in this tournament are fucking fantastic.
And then you got Danny LaRusso.
Who's really not.
It's embarrassing.
It's quite embarrassing, but as a, you know, 11-year-old kid seeing Danny LaRusso, who was the coolest, he looked so cool. He was such a handsome kid, you know, come from out of town, you know, gets run off the road on his BMX because he's the new kid. And Elizabeth Shue, falls for him, who's Johnny's ex. And he stands up for Elizabeth Shue and gets beaten up by Johnny and his crew. He's got a battered up BMX. Johnny and his boys have got motorbikes. They all come from the right side of town. They've all moneyed. And LaRusso's not got a pot to piss in.
He hasn't, has he?
And after getting beaten up, he meets Mr. Miyagi, who's the sort of caretaker of the flats that Daniel lives in. And then he starts the arduous task of learning martial arts by painting fences and sanding floors. And then all of a sudden there's one scene where he says, like, paint the fence, you know, sand the floor. And he's essentially learning how to block.
Get those strong arms.
I don't know how practical that
is. Wash your car, paint your fence.
He's not happy about
no,
it.
No, he isn't.
But he also gets a really tasty motor out of it as well. But this scene at the end...
Before you go into the marvellous, like the crane kick, Danny LaRusso's fighting stance is, I don't understand how the whole crew and the choreographers looked at him stand like that and go, that looks really cool. He looks demented. And like he looks like you could just blow him over. That's what kind of annoyed me about it. And but like when you were saying like how like the a lot of the fight scenes in this are choreographed quite an average support. We had nothing to compare it to,
True.
Like back, you know, if you go and rewatch like something like Kickboxer or Bloodsport, honourable mentions for both of me, loved them. But when I've gone back to watch them and I'm watching fight scenes, I'm like, oh my God, I'm like borderline bored sometimes. And I know some people might be upset with me saying shit like that because I don't feel like that when I watch
the narrative
of Chinese
feels
ones.
So good.
Yeah, the narrative's great.
You've got your hero.
Yeah.
You know, he's the underdog. You know, it's the perfect story of the bullied kid getting payback. And it's so good. And then he has, he gets his, legs sweeped and like badly. Actually played in Camden once in my band, and I was looking at the Dublin Castle on the bands that were playing, and there was a band called Sweep the Leg Johnny, I thought that's a great name for a band. And there's so many iconic lines in that film. And there was a UFC event where when it went quiet, you heard someone in the crowd go, "Yeah, get him a body bag." And you think, that's so good. And it all builds to this sort of final moment where it looks like Johnny's going to beat LaRusso, and then LaRusso pulls the iconic crane kick, which I'm looking at the still of it now, and it's Daniel with both his hands above. I'm sure you all know the image. Mm. Both hands above his head, you know, limp wrists, and with one knee up. You've not got to be Bruce Lee to realise what might be coming at you here.
Yeah.
He's probably going to kick you with the other leg, but Johnny walks straight into it, gets KO'd.
He sticks his chin out for it as well, doesn't he?
Gets KO'd, and Danny becomes a champion. Everybody in the crowd loves him. He gets the girl. Johnny forgives him, hands him the trophy, and the fairy tale is complete. Daniel LaRusso's final... in the final of the All Valley Karate Championship. So shit, but brilliant.
From that picture, it just looks like Johnny is about 5 weight classes above Danny and is about to steam through him.
Yeah.
But that's not how it goes. And you know what? Cobra Kai, the TV show, I think it's quite good writing. I think
LaRusso's had 30 years to learn martial arts.
Yeah.
He's still shit in that.
He's still dog shit, man. You'd think, oh, do you know what? Everyone thinks I'm the karate kid.
I think, like... The casting was obviously he was Ralph Macchio. He was going to be a superstar. Mm. Unfortunately, he didn't. You know, he made Crossroads after this. Yeah. Not the soap. That would have been quite weird. But made Crossroads.
Was Britney Spears one called Crossroads? Yeah. Well, she's all right. I watched it the other week.
it's such an iconic scene. The still we're looking at. It's just etched in martial arts history, and I do think. You speak to any film fan that loves a feel-good film or any martial artist and they will say that film made its mark on them.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, 100%. Right.
What's next, Mr. Glasson?
Let's have a look. So, what we got here? It is Luke versus Darth, Empire Strikes Back. Mm. I like...
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I forgot, this is such an easy one to sleep on, right? I think. Like, I had so many to pick from. And you've obviously shouted out Star Wars. Star Wars is just relentlessly so many good different fight scenes that you could pick, right? Imagine them, you know, them above the Sarlacc pit monster in Return of the Jedi. Mm. It's just all good shit. This fight scene,
you can
though,
also recreate that scene by just dropping small soldiers into your partner's arsehole.
Yeah, make sure they don't shave because you really want to see the hair and that. Yeah. That'll really give that a great effect. Did I show? I showed you that meme of the guy looking at his missus bent over and he's looking down doggy style, and you can just send another picture. It's just a cut of the Sarlacc pit monster. Yeah, so basically...
Before we get on with this...
Yeah, sure.
Whilst talking about the Sarlacc pit...
Yeah.
That was my second pick. That fight scene when Luke jumps and then...
Han's blind, isn't he?
Yeah, and spins off and then fucking... literally fucking swings onto Jabba's palace and it just goes off there. And I mean, there's some serious eye candy in that scene.
It's a quality set piece that's set up from this film, Empire Strikes Back, when Han gets put into the carbonite or whatever it's called.
Carbonite.
And then Leia fucking shrank Garrot's Jabba, which is fucking dope as fuck. She's super cool. So this scene, like, I went and rewatched it. Again, we talk about choreography. The choreography's good, like the sword fight here. It's nothing compared to, like, if you was to go to something like when you see Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon fight Darth Maul. The choreography by the time they did Phantom Menace is just insane, and it's really good. It's like, obviously, they'd really sort of like thought about how they're going to prove it. Loads of martial arts experts in there doing it. Ray Parker's Darth Maul. But this
Was that Ray Parker Jr.?
Ray Parker Jr. Yeah, no.
Wow. Yeah. He was a busy boy in the 80s,
exactly.
Wasn't he?
But to me, this is like, you had a lightsaber fight scene in the first one between Obi-Wan and Darth Vader, but like, Obi-Wan's kind of just playing for time.
He bottled it, didn't he?
He fucking, his arsehole went, didn't he?
His Sarlacc pit went.
His Sarlacc pit just closed right up and he disappeared into thin air.
Yeah.
This is like, you've had Darth Vader, like, through in the run-up to all this, you've had nearly had two movies now to build the greatest villain ever, and Luke to go through training to the point where you know he's the underdog here. Everyone's saying, don't go and face him because you're going to go and get your fucking arse lit up. And he's like, no. And so this is it. This is when he finally faces Darth Vader after two movies. So you really get they've really built it up. And, you know, as much as this is fighting, I think the cinematography, it's dark with the two lightsabers. It just looks like an insanely good set piece. And this was before, like, the 90s where they just went crazy and every film was fucking shot pitch black. And a lot of them didn't really work. Here, it just works perfectly. Yeah. And it's everything between these two. It's what each other are saying to each other. Obviously, you have one of the greatest plot twists in all of film. It turns out that Darth Vader is Luke's son.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think it's the other way around.
No, it's not.
Oh.
No.
I'll have to rewatch that.
You have to rewatch it, mate. The film will make so much more sense once you realise
Luke's son.
No! The child support payments are going to be fucking massive. It's crazy. It's such a good fight. Luke, when I was rewatching it, I forgot he's sweating buckets in this fucking scene. He just looks like a drowned rat.
Well, what's interesting is you don't see sweat in fight scenes very often.
Yeah,
and I think if anyone ever tries to hit a punch bag for a minute, also with the added pressure of someone's trying to smash your face in,
yeah,
you and I are going to sweat.
You're going to sweat buckets.
I quite like the fact that he's got a sweat on. Because them lightsabers, imagine, they're going to be hot as well, aren't they?
Imagine how sweaty Darth is in a non-breathable black gimp outfit.
Imagine his balls must be kicking right up.
Yeah, absolutely. It's incredible. It's the suspense and it's the show of, like, this is really the first lightsaber duel. And it's just, that's just got an impact to it. And there's been loads of good lightsaber fights. You can see them in all the shows now. They've really nailed it. But did I ever have the meaning of gravitas this does? No. And it goes back to, like, your Karate Kid. It's the storytelling in the lead up to it.
Yeah.
You don't have to have thousands of fight scenes. I mean, that goes completely against what the raid is, which is relentless martial arts. But you don't have to do that. If you don't know what you're doing, do it like this, mate.
And also, Luke loses a hand in this.
He does. It's his wanking hand as well.
It is. Yeah,
but you don't hear that until that's in the bonus material. Bonus scenes.
You get the Robo Tug where he has
with that droid with the mask.
Yeah, my dad.
A what?
2-1-B medical droid. That was my dad.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, you did. Is that what? Why are you frowning at me? I know it's your dad, mate.
Right, solid chat, mate. Solid chat.
What's your number? Was this your number one?
My number two.
Your number two.
There's Bugsy Malone and Blasey Brown there.
Is she about 10 years older than him?
Yeah, that was actually, in real life, that was his nan. and Dandy Dan there.
Looks like my nan, to be fair.
I'm talking Bugsy Malone, of course. Just an absolute masterpiece of a film. Again, almost like a... a Ralph Macchio, you know, that kind of sort of Italian looking kid. And
this was Chachi, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. Scott Baio, who went on to play Chachi in Happy Days. Yeah. Just the coolest kid ever in this film. Mm-hmm. You know,
look at that hair. Look how slick
look
that
how cool that hair is. And
I've never had hair that
to then
good.
Get in them pedal cars. Mm. I mean, if you've never seen Bugsy Malone, it's one of the greatest musicals as well as one of the greatest films you'll ever see. And basically, these fight scenes in this film are armed with splurge guns, which essentially just fire custard pies and custard pie mix or whatever out of a machine gun, you know, in the old kind of Tommy gun style.
Yeah.
It's so cool. And the rivalry between Fat Sam and Dandy Dan comes to a pinnacle at the end. You know, Bugsy Malone is literally the guy sort of who gets bought in by Fat Sam. And essentially it's all about trying to find peace and harmony.
Yeah.
The songs in this film are amazing.
Yep.
There's a really funny boxing scene in it as well, which has got one of the most ridiculous fight scenes in with Slugger Joe. Basically it all comes to a crescendo at the end of the film where they're at Fat Sam's Grand Slam speakeasy and then Dandy Dan and his henchmen like literally turn up on the sort of second floor, on this top of this stairwell, and then everybody screams. You know, there's people sitting there watching the show. There's singers and dancers on stage, and then basically underneath all the tables, they're all tooled up with their splurge guns. And then the crescendo of this film is just custard pie madness. It's the stuff of kids' dreams.
Yeah, absolutely.
That you can just sit down.
Do those guns actually work, the custard pie gun?
I used one. I went to RADA.
What's RADA?
In London, some sort of governing body of, I presume, so something to do with a lot of actors go to RADA. Okay. And get trained at RADA.
Right,
and so we went to RADA where they had an exhibition about the maybe the 30th anniversary of this film at the time. Mm-hmm. And so I got to see the car, got to see all the props and loads of stills. I love this film. And the director sadly died a few years ago. And he also made The Commitments. I'm trying to think what other films he made. I think he made... Did he make Time Bandits? I might be wrong.
I think he definitely did.
And it just goes off. And then literally...
Did you say you used the custard gun? Because you sort of glazed over that quite quickly.
Yeah.
So you shot custard out of it?
So you basically go there. And I went with the kids and we all got dressed up as gangsters.
Amazing.
And we've got photos with the splurge guns.
Right.
And then they had a target room in this thing where you could fire them at targets.
So how far did it go? Is it like a paintball gun, effectively?
No, it kind of fired more of a jet rather than like bullets of it.
Okay.
But I reckon the shooting range was maybe 4 meters.
Oh, fucking hell, disappointing.
But
because the ones in the film, I'm sure they shoot more range and they do bullets.
No. They did feel like they shoot sort of pockets of it.
Okay.
Yeah, but I don't know. But I'll try and find a photo of all of us lot with the splurge guns and put it on the socials. But at the pinnacle of this fight scene, the pianist falls forward and his head hits the piano and you just hear bong and it stops the fight. And then he just runs his finger up the piano and goes ding, di, di, ding, 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 di, di, ding, ding. And then the song to finish the film is you give a little love and it all comes back to you. You're going to be remembered for the things that you say and do. And it's the most sweetest thing ever. That's my funeral song. I'm being buried to that song and I fucking love it.
I'm gonna do everything in my power to make sure that doesn't happen.
Brilliant. Please make sure it's Queens of the Stone Age then. The thought of you sitting there laughing knowing that I'm in my coffin listening to Queens
rolling
of the Stone
in your grave. Rolling in your grave.
So my number two is Bugsy Malone. So
did you when you had the custard guns, did you shoot each other with them, get covered in custard?
No, you shot them at targets.
I've seen photos of Carol covered in custard.
That's on the dark web.
Don't worry about it, mate.
You're number one.
I've forgotten what... Oh, it's this. Of course it is. It's The Matrix. You hate The Matrix, don't you?
Just everything about it I hate.
There's a lot of questions of morality about The Matrix.
Yeah, I don't want to think about it.
Okay, all right, you don't want to think about that sort of stuff. All right, sure.
No, but you have to think when you watch this film, don't you?
Not really. a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hardly like, it's not like Primer. It's not going to fucking twist your head up in knots, I don't think. And if you want, you can just sit back and relax and watch people shoot people.
Yeah, I know. But the thing is, right, he cheats. Right,
all of that
bending the wrong way and flying through the air. Yeah. It ain't real.
No, it ain't real, mate. No, unlike Bugsy Malone, it ain't real.
But yeah, I don't like. But do you know what I rewatched the other day? I will let you bang on about this
in a minute. Go on, mate.
But
I rewatched shit all over my number one
because I thought I might have one of the fight scenes in it. Right?
Right. Okay.
And it was on at Christmas, and I rewatched it last week. I rewatched Big Trouble in Little China.
Wow. Right. Yeah. I mean, I can't believe. It didn't even run through my mind.
Yeah.
I feel like I've let everyone... Guys, I'm sorry.
I will say, didn't quite hold up as well as I remembered.
Yeah, like, okay.
Kurt Russell's fucking great,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, of course he is, yeah.
But there's the scene where they're flying through the air, sword fighting in midair.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I remember when I watched that film, I just thought, I don't want to see that. I want to see him just fighting.
I love that bit.
And I think that's where maybe my... hatred, apart from Star Wars, of sci-fi comes from where it's not real.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My brain can't comprehend it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think you know that my missus loves Matrix.
Every time
I've tried to watch it, Custard. Because I know everybody loves this film.
Yeah.
And I try and get my head around it.
Yeah.
The same way, it's exactly the same with Jeff Buckley. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know I should like it, but I can't get my head around it. It doesn't work for me. And it's all, again, if you're having a fight, don't wear one of them fucking weird goth's coats. Like, just pop a pair of shorts on. Like,
Keep cool. That's what Luke should have done.
Exactly. He wouldn't have had a sweat on, but he kept messing around with fucking cloaks and fucking shit like that. It's not practical. I'd fall over it straight away.
There's so and much like, to unpack here, mate. There really is.
And when he's doing this the picture we're looking at now, right?
This is normal.
There's some bloke in the bottom right-hand screen who's trying to show Neo. Is that his name?
Neo, close enough.
He's trying to show Neo that he's trotting dog shit, right?
Yeah, that's the frame.
And the other bloke's looks like he's run out of bullets.
Yeah.
And I just think...
He's getting shot.
Keanu Reeves,
he's
doing a one-handed handstand.
Cartwheel.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Whilst firing a gun.
Okay.
Somehow,
his
stupid coat hasn't just fallen down over his face.
That's such a good point, yeah.
Right?
That's the most unrealistic thing about this movie.
And his sunglasses ain't come off.
Yeah, his shades are just bang on as well, yeah.
Like, take your sunglasses off, mate.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they're going to impair your vision. It just falls apart at every single hurdle.
Yeah. Have you finished shitting all over my
face? Yeah,
why
do you like it? Yeah.
I mean, like, to carry on that thing, like, this, like, you know, he looks so cool, like, he does look cool in it, but it spurred not only the, you know, it was just adopted by all the goths that would go into your nightclub, Pink Toothbrush, right? And I've seen many a person live their life as the identity of Neo in the Pink Toothbrush.
It's important that you have this one other thing.
Mm.
To pull that look off, you look like Keanu Reeves.
you've got to be point good looking, point break speed, motherfucker, handsome.
If you've just got some kind of slightly unwashed long metal hair, it doesn't have the same impact.
Yeah,
like I think that's when your metal leather and stuff like that works better.
Yeah.
If you're gonna start wearing them long jackets and carrying around glow sticks and stuff like that,
it ain't
for me, mate.
No, I get you, mate. I get you. It's also unfortunately been adopted by all the high school killers.
And that.
Yeah. And like, weirdly, that's the morality of this scene as well. Like, they've got, they're trying to take down like this, like the sort of like the Matrix, as it were, that's run by computers. But all these people he's shooting up, they just think they're living their lives. They're human beings living their lives. And he's like, they're just massacring them.
Is he not a human being?
He is, but I'm not getting it. You said you struggle with the Matrix, so I'm not going to get into it, mate.
Parallel universes.
No,
and shit.
Don't worry about it, mate. Don't worry. Just think. The reason why this scene's cool, and there's so many scenes to pick from in the Matrix. Like, we went there with no expectations. We're like, I watched this Matrix movie, and a bit like what I said about the raid when people were cheering. The end of the Matrix when Neo gets up after being shot, we were cheering
Spoiler
for him.
Alert.
I put this on for Molly. It was like showing a dog a card trick. She fucking hated it. It ruined it for me. We watched it a couple of years ago and she's like, why is this good? And I just thought, for fuck's sake, like it really spoiled it. And then actually coming back to it the other day to prepare for this.
Molly, yeah. Like what? If you want to come around and watch Bugsy Malone, you'll love
yeah,
it, trust
she
me.
She would love Bugsy Malone. She would love Bugsy Malone. There's a lot of pictures of Molly covered in custard on the dark web too.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was an event that Carol and Molly had been to together, but I don't know. It just seemed they had a lot of fun. With that football team. So basically, I picked this scene, the lobby scene. It's great because it's just all that bullet time photography that they'd sussed out for The Matrix just on fucking speed by the time of this scene.
Oh, isn't it? It's them slow motion bullets and him bending over like 900 degrees.
He does cartwheels and they run up walls. Trinity in this does this great thing where she walks around this pillar, kicks the shotgun out of the guy's hand. It flips over the back of his head and she shoots him in the back. It's just insane choreography. Again, this is where
remake would be brilliant, wouldn't it? Just running into a wall.
She kicks the guy's shotgun, it goes off in her stomach. Yeah. She's just lying there in abject pain.
Shittest cartwheel you could possibly do. Yeah. All of that coke gets all over your face, your sunglasses come off.
But so basically, it's like, again, we talk about, like, this had a lot of action in it, this film, from the get-go. But there is a build-up, and you do feel jeopardy in this. Like, because you're not familiar with the franchise at this point, there's jeopardy. You feel like this could all go tits up. And there's a scene before it where Mr. Smith's got Morpheus sort of like in a chair, and he does this big speech, you know, saying that, you know, I've got it written down here. Can you hear me, Morpheus? I'm going to be honest with you. I hate this place, this zoo, this prison, this reality, whatever you want to call it. I can't stand it any longer. It's the smell, if there is such a thing. I feel saturated by it. I can taste your stink. And anyway, he goes on and on about how much he hates the human construct and human beings. And he's like, basically, you guys are fucked. You're going to give me what I want, which is these codes. And that's the point where Keanu walks into the lobby with Trinity. They put like that. Why? I've turned everything on silent except for my phone.
I mean, what a statement. What a statement right there. I've turned everything on silent apart from my phone.
No, I meant my watch. My watch. Right. I meant my watch. I always say phone and watch, getting confused. That's my partner. Ruining Matrix again.
Nice one. That, I bet that's a message saying.
Yeah.
Do you want to grab a DVD of Bugsy Malone on the way home?
We try Resurrections tonight. Like, no, you won't want to try Resurrections. And then, like, he puts the guns in a metal detector. Mm. It all goes off. They ask to look in his jacket. He opens up his jacket. He's armed to the nines, and then it just kicks off. And I think, like, you know, what is it? What's the song by Propellerheads? It's a Propellerheads song. I did make it. Spy Break plays while just the most insane gunfight happens that you've ever seen in your life. It's just it's incredible cinematography, that, for action cinematography, and. It made my number one. And there's so many other great fight scenes in The Matrix that, yeah, it's just the bollocks. And, I think it's for me, it's a worthy fight scene at my number one.
Fair enough, nerd. I am going to go for...
Hold on, let me guess. This is this where when Ricky Gervais fought...
Grumbovi.
That's exactly it.
It's just joshing. This is Apollo Creed versus Rocky Balboa, the final fight scene at the end of Rocky 2, which is my favourite of the Rocky films. I could have chose 4 because it was probably the one that I watched the most when it came out, and I called it at the right time. His fights with Clubber Lang in Rocky 3 are great. And the first Rocky film is amazing, but for me, Rocky 2... just nails it.
Finally does it.
And if you've not watched the recent documentary about Stallone on Netflix, I can't recommend it enough. Like, this guy...
Try.
He's a fucking maverick. Yeah. Like, he'd obviously written and directed Rocky 1, and everybody said, do not play Rocky. Like, and he just went, I want to do it all, and he'd done it all, and he fucking cleared up with awards. The film score, you know, is iconic. iconic. How can you ever hear ba 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 and not go fucking hell? And it's Goosebumps. And for any lad, it's just, I'll say that's I shouldn't say any lad. Anyone that has ever done any training or has ever kind of got invested in them films, it's Goosebumps and inspiring, that soundtrack, the Bill Conti soundtrack, going to fly now. And then they went on to do fucking Hearts on Fire and Eye of the Tiger and all these Burning Heart, all these amazing songs. But the crescendo to Rocky II is his rematch with Apollo Creed, played by Cole Weathers. And I just think this is the fight, you know. It's always a fairy tale with Rocky. It's good overcoming evil, and Apollo Creed's just giving him shit in the press conferences in a kind of Muhammad Ali style, isn't he? He's kind of the king of Sting, and he's the man, and Rocky's just the local guy from the local town in Philly, and he's the massive underdog, and his trainer's telling him he should quit. Because he's got trouble with his eye, and
charming.
But his missus falls into a coma in the lead up to the fight. Comes out of the coma, he says he's going to quit and not fight anymore, and she just whispers the words "win," and then Mickey just screams, "What are we waiting for?" Cue ba 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 ba, and then it's just the best fucking montage of training. You get that iconic scene where he runs up the steps in Philly. All the fucking people in Philly are running down the street after him. He gets to the top, shadow boxes at the top, and then it goes bong, and it's the bell, and then it just cuts to the arena. And then the fight scene is just so fucking iconic. And it goes to the last round, and in that last round, it's a really even matched fight. They're bashing the hell out of each other. Rocky smashed up Apollo's ribs with his body shots, and Apollo, you know, dances really light on his feet. Whereas Rocky's just quite flat-footed as a brawler, and he's picking off Rocky and smashing up his eyes, and then they throw this iconic shots at the end where they both land and they both go down, and then you just cuts to the ref counting them, and then you think Apollo's going to, spoiler alert, you think Apollo's going to get to his feet, and he's just getting to his feet on eight, and as Rocky's pulling himself up the ropes. And then Apollo just slips and falls back down onto his ass. And then Rocky just literally leans back off of the top rope and gets to his feet somehow and just staggers around the ring. And then you get the euphoric winning music from that Bill Conti score. And it's just then leads to the beautiful scene of "Yo, Adrian, we did it." And I love it. I love it so much. I'm getting emotional talking about it. I fucking love films where the underdog wins. It's just the best narrative. You'll see that in most of the films that I've chosen today. And no more is it ever kind of prevalent than in Rocky II. Love it. Yes.
I think it's shit.
Well, if Rocky was doing handstands and fucking firing bullets.
That's what it
and also,
needed.
The thing is with them bullets, right? Everyone thinks he's amazing. You can see them coming.
Yeah.
Just get out of the way of them.
Yeah, yeah. But that's what Rocky needed. More bullets. In the ring.
Yeah. Well, look, this has been the first episode that we've recorded in the studio. If you're listening, please come over and have a look.
Come and have a look.
Yeah. And
you sound very desperate when he's begging you to say, please, we don't need you. You'll probably want to, though. Well, I'm not saying please, but you'll probably want to come over.
I'll suck your dick, man.
For a cheeseburger?
Yeah. So head over to patreon.com/hardcore listening to watch this episode and support Chris and I. And yeah, we promise to give you loads more fun content for you to... Content's the word nowadays, isn't it?
Yeah, you need content.
And if you... why not head over to the socials if you don't follow us over there? Because some of these... episodes that we're doing, we'll be chopping up into a few little reels for the social, so you can have a little sneaky peek. If us telling you to come over and have a look at Patreon's not enough, have a little look at what you're missing out on. Come and join the gang, support the podcast, and thanks again to our sponsors.
Thanks
Say
for
What
watching.
Podcast.
Thanks for the sponsors.
Southern
it's been a lot of
area
fun in
martial
here.
Arts.
Yes, thank you very much.
And thank you. It's been a very painless process.
It's been really good fun. Catch you next time.
Bye.
It's a drunken soiree in the within.
Chris and Stu present Hardcore Listening, the podcast.